Welcome everyone to the final episode of our zombie season here on the Here's Johnny podcast. I am your host, Larry.
And I'm your other host, Justin. We're finally here at the end. It's only been like 6 months.
Yeah, and we have brought on one of our patrons, Seagram. He was previously on the podcast a few months ago with The Boy, another lovely audio-filled issue podcast.
Oh, that Craig.
Back when we were using good old Craig before we figured out other methods. But what's up, Seagram? What's new, man?
Not too much. I have actually have new hardware, so even with Craig wouldn't be an issue now anyway, thankfully.
you been watching any scary movies or playing any scary games?
I actually watched a ton of horror movies when I was at the beach. I finally watched Scream for the first time.
Yeah, you mentioned that. I don't know how you did so long.
Okay, wait. You don't know how somebody waited so long, Larry.
Scream was out longer than Shaun of the Dead.
It doesn't matter.
And I would argue Scream was more culturally important to the United States than Shaun of the Dead.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, but I watched Scream, and then I watched the movie for this week. I watched the prequel to that movie.
How was that?
It was okay.
I have some notes on that.
Yeah, it was interesting, but I wouldn't say it's like mind blowing or anything. This is definitely the better movie than the prequel, but it was enjoyable.
Back to Scream real quick. Did you watch the best one in the franchise? Did you watch Scream 2?
No, I just watched Scream.
Scream 2 is the best sequel to ever exist, ever. Better than Two Towers. Better than Empire Strikes Back. It is the best sequel to ever been made. I'm saying that right here.
Just starting right out with the hot takes, huh?
Yep, this is how it goes.
Justin, what's been going on with you?
Oh boy, started playing Final Fantasy VII again.
The PS4 one, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. I'm just trying to finish up some trophies.
You're trying to go on a date with Barrett, right?
Yeah, it's that and hit level 99 is the only trophy I've left.
Well, 99 is really, are you going to do it the hard way or are you going to do it
No.
Easy? Yeah, that's what I figured. Just throw on the 4x speed and the super boost and you'll be there in like 2 seconds.
Well, exactly. That and what else have I been doing? I've been playing some Breath of the Wild again. And
I am so excited to play that once I get my Switch in November.
I'll do it.
It's killing me waiting this long, but I want my Pokemon Special Edition Switch.
Oh, so you're going for... Is there a Special Edition?
If there's a Let's Go Pikachu Eevee, there's going to be one for Sword and Shield.
Yeah. No, that's fair. Other than that, I just watched Train to Busan
last night.
You
finished the book, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. I finished American Psycho. That lovely book, let's just say. Save my thoughts for that for a little later. But other than that, I haven't really been up to much. Just been sick again. Thank you, kids. Yeah, what about yourself, Larry?
I also finished American Psycho, but I do want to make a note that as I'm sitting here writing our review, because we're going to do a Patreon-exclusive review of it just because of the content. So, Matt, you'll get to listen to that one, but... the more I think about it, the more like I start reading like critical analysis of it, the more I start understanding it better. And my
I still don't like
really,
it.
Really crappy review is starting to get better and better. But we'll get to that. I've played some Ghostface on Dead by Daylight. Killer is hard, and I am not good.
Yeah.
Like difficult. I like to think I was decent at Survivor, especially when we were all playing together. Like I think I was pretty decent, especially with Lori. But Killer is an entirely different game scenario. In Ghostface, you have to hit him 3 times to knock him down.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Instead of, like, with Michael, it was only 2. And so my first match, I didn't even kill anybody. So that was fun.
It seems like it would be so easy when you're playing Survivor because you get wrecked so hard. And then you play Killer and you can't find anybody the whole match. And you're like,
granted, my first match was at Gideon. And I think that's really hard for Killer in first person because all those walls, it just gets, like, you can get twisted really fast. But, no, I like Ghostface. I like Dead by Daylight. I mean, the hardest part is that, like, to be good at it, you got it. Like, I mean, you knew this, Matt. You were sinking, like, hours into it, you know? And,
yeah.
I don't know. There's just so many other games I'm trying to get to. And, like, I might be buying Crash Bandicoot Racing tomorrow.
Hey, what about Borderlands?
That's right. So maybe I'll be buying that Sunday after I go see Child's Play.
All right. Okay, good.
But yeah, I'm seeing Child's Play this weekend. I'll have seen it in the past for podcast listeners. But that's pretty much it. So let's just go ahead and get into it. We want to say thank you to our patrons. And that's why you're here, Seagram, to review this movie.
Thank you.
You picked it. It's Train to Busan. It's a Korean film. But yeah, before we get into it, just thank you for supporting us.
We appreciate it
a lot, but we like to know that we're at least getting some feedback and we know what part of our audience is like from you.
Yeah, I'm happy to do it.
All right, so with that, Justin, play that music and let's get into our Train to Busan review. So, why don't you tell the audience why you picked Train to Busan? You could have made us watch Zombievers. You could have pulled something way out of your hat. Why did you pick Train to Busan?
So, I was kind of trying to pick something that you guys might not have seen yet. And, Larry, I know you hadn't seen it. And
correct.
I watched actually a whole bunch of different zombie movies. I watched The Ravenous. I watched The Night Eats the World. I watched Cargo. You know, I watched a bunch of different Netflix and Shudder ones, and just like nothing really stuck out to me particularly. Mm-hmm. Like they were okay, but they weren't great. I think Here Alone was another one that I watched. So I had been looking through your master list, and I just realized that we hadn't talked about many foreign films, or you know, there wasn't one on the list yet. So I thought I'd just go ahead and pick this one because I knew it was a good movie. It'd be fun to talk about.
I will say.
Yeah, because it's kind of opened the floodgates to foreign films that we've been talking about.
Because there's one we were going to do for the Deranged Man season. We were going to do High Tension. It's a French horror film.
Okay. Oh, it's fantastic.
It's really, really, really good. And we actually picked one out for is way later, but we have another one lined up too. But a little bit of production notes on this film. It's a 2016 Korean zombie apocalypse action thriller, according to IMDb, directed by Yeon Sang-ho. Spoiler alert, and I'm going to do my best with these names. Please forgive me if I mess them up. Sang-ho has been directing since 1997, and most notably, he directed the animated Soul Station as a prequel to this after Train to Busan came out. And in 2018, his second feature film, Psychokinesis, was a superhero film. This was actually his first live-action movie. Prior to this, all he had been doing was animation.
Wow.
It stars Gong Yu as the father, Soo-ann Kim as the daughter, and Young Yu-mi as the pregnant woman. Because I couldn't pronounce their names, I just labeled them what they were in the movie. So
okay, I'm glad I'm not the only one who did that.
Gong Yu and Young Yu Mi previously appeared together in 2011, The Crucible. That is not The Crucible written by Arthur Miller. It is a Crucible entirely different from that storyline. The film premiered at the 2016 Cannes Film Festival. It was shot on a budget of $8.5 million and grossed $93.1 million globally. Some sad notes here for me. There is an American remake in the works.
Of course.
James Wan is producing it, and Gary Dowerman is penning a script. Dowerman has written The Nun, all three Annabelles, and he co-wrote 2017 It. So at least there's good names behind it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think, though, is you don't need to do it. But that's me. In South Korea, they are currently planning a sequel called Bando, but Yong Sung-ho is not attached to it. And that's all I have. So now we get to sit back and listen to our patron do a 60-second plot summary.
Okay.
You ready?
Are you ready?
Got to look at these names again real quick.
as soon as you're ready, I'll give you a 3-2-1 countdown, and you can start to your heart's content. You ready?
Yeah, let's give it a shot, man.
3-2-1 go.
Okay, so it starts out with kind of a miniature quarantine. You have a guy in a truck driving through. He's angry because they're stopping him on his way to work. He hits a deer because he's not paying attention. The deer stands up after he drives away, kind of foreshadowing as to what's going on. You cut to the main character in the movie, who I'm just going to call MC Dad. He's kind of your typical workaholic father, doesn't pay attention to his kid. His daughter wants to go see her mom, wants to ride the train really bad. He feels bad because he gets her a present that he's already gotten her, so he agrees to ride the train with her. They get on the train. As they're getting on, you kind of see Patient Zero run onto the train, and from there, all hell pretty much breaks loose. The girl that runs on the train bites one of the stewardesses. There's just zombies on a train everywhere. People are running. Then you meet the father and his pregnant wife, and the father gets kind of ticked off. I nicknamed him Beast Mode. I don't know how to say his name. But oh, really? Wow, that was awful. I didn't get anywhere.
Ooh.
You know what? Yeah, you got to the most important part where we meet.
I call him
Beefcake. I don't know.
Yeah, I have him as Korean Rocky in my notes. but yeah, I mean, basically the rest of the movie plot is just zombie shenanigans break loose. People start going down one by one. Father sacrifices himself for the pregnant girl, and his daughter can survive, and they make it to safety.
Yeah, I mean, I should have made better bullet points. I guess I tried to squeeze in too much.
It's hard. That's why when Kyle came on and did the Uzz plot summary, we were so taken aback because it was top tier.
I don't know. There's one coming up here soon that.
Oh my god! Yeah. Oh geez.
Yeah.
Well, I tried to just do it on the fly. I mean, the big things for me were where they stopped in Taichung and got separated on the train. And then the end, you know? So that was like all I had left.
That was sweet. So yeah, let's just go ahead and get in the plot. We have an open discussion. Let's talk about pros first. The first thing I want to say is I loved it. Like, normally, like, family drama is kind of a yawn for me, but I was pleasantly surprised by how well paced it was and how it was actually meaningful. And I really liked that, which is something I usually don't like.
Yeah, I actually, I had pacing written down too. The movie moved along really well. I just thought the writing was really tight. Like, it didn't feel like there was anything just shoved in there just to throw it in. You know, it felt like everything had a purpose in the movie. And
I disagree with that a little bit, but we'll get into that in cons.
I will say that, like, sometimes with foreign films, when you're reading the subtitles, sometimes it's a little bit of a distraction to read the subtitles. It kind of takes away from the film. I actually found that in this movie, it didn't take away from it. I mean, granted, there wasn't a lot happening plot-wise.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of more of the same. Not in a bad, I don't mean that in a bad way either. But I found that, I wasn't sure where to put this, but yeah, the subtitles weren't too off-putting. Like, there was enough kind of going on that nothing really took you out of the moment.
The next thing I have is that I really like the characters of Korean Rocky and Babe Ruth. That's what I called him.
He is my favorite character in this whole movie.
Yeah, and it was really sad when they all died, but I will say that, like, their deaths were filmed well and, like, fit their characters, the character arcs that have been built up for them, and I really, really appreciate that, because sometimes you get characters you get attached to and they go out dumb. It's like, I mean, you haven't seen Scream 2, so I'm not going to ruin it for you, but there's a character in Scream 2 that I also feel gets a nice end to his arc. So, I don't know. I really like it when they take characters that you're attached to, and it sucks to see him go, but when they do it well, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think my rating is probably going to be kind of biased, because this movie, to me, and Justin, I think you'll understand, this movie was like straight dad power fantasy.
Oh, yeah. Big time. I will be the first to admit I cried both the first and second time I watched this movie.
The next thing I have is, I have it as a pro because I think it was well done. Every single person in that quote unquote safe train, once they got back on it, when they're heading, like, after the first stop, right? I hated all of them, but I felt that their reaction was very realistic and I could actually see that being the case.
Like the mob mentality kind of thing.
Yeah, and I really, really, really appreciated that. And, like, even though I hated it, it made me mad. But it, to me, that's a sign of a good plot, of a good realistic plot.
Well, not only that, but it felt really nice when they got their comeuppance, like,
yeah,
3 minutes
slow
later.
Motion and everything. Yeah, I really, really, really enjoyed that. The next pro that I have is I like the father's sacrifice.
Like at the end?
Yeah, the way it was set up, the way like it shot back to him being happy with his daughter, and he had a smile, and like he.
Larry, you're gonna make me cry again. Let's not go through this.
Well, I mean, it's a big part of the plot. I mean, sometimes they do stuff like this, right? And it's just not done well. And it goes back to the point. Like I said, family drama usually for me is like a wash. I don't like it, but I thought it was brilliantly done, and like the acting was really, really good, and it was there for all three of the characters there at the end. I was really, really a fan of it. And then the last pro that I have is that I was very concerned we were going to get a very nihilistic Night of the Living Dead ending. And
yeah.
I'm happy we didn't get that because, like, I don't know. Like, nihilism is fine and all, but I didn't want to see that. Like, that would have been heavy to watch a pregnant woman and a child get lit up. So I was happy that didn't end up being the case.
And I like the way they handled that too. Like they brought the story full circle, you mm-hmm. know, with the song that she was singing for her dad, you know. I mean, I love this whole movie. So
yeah. All right. Any other pros you guys have?
I did write down one thing.
What's up?
Now I've seen a lot of zombie movies, and I thought that the mechanic that they had with the sunlight, I thought that was really unique.
Yes.
Like they added a lot of extra oomph to the story to me when they had the parts with the tunnels where, you know, they built tension and they let it off, and it was just really like a good way to just spice up zombies on a train, because that's essentially what the movie is, you know. So
I actually talked about that a little bit more in cinematography.
Okay. Just, yeah,
but no, I do think that's a really it was fun to watch that mechanic kind of take place, and it kind of set it up too, like by the clouded eyes, right, that they can't really see that well, and I did very much like that. Jay, you have any other pros?
Kind of speaking of in this, well, a different kind of vein, and I wasn't sure 100% where to put this, because usually we put the acting under like audio and stuff, but mm-hmm. I found that the characters themselves were written like extremely yes. well. Even like the asshole guy, I don't know what to call him. Like,
oh, I have notes on him. We haven't gotten notes on him yet.
I have him in my notes as fuckhead.
Yeah, like their characters never really do anything outside of what you think their characters would do. Yeah. And I don't know, I think it was just really well written, like character wise.
So then going into cons, the first one I have is I do think the movie went a little bit long. Like I think 2 hours, I don't think it needed to be the full 2 hours. I think that it could have been cleaned up a little bit. Like, I don't know, but maybe in the beginning, I just think it was 2 hours was a long time for me, personally. I didn't take up a whole lot of points for it. I just felt like when I realized it was 2 hours long, I was like, oh, this, it did feel its length, and sometimes that's not a good thing.
I actually found that, like, kind of not with or against your point, but, like, the stress of the whole, because it was pretty much as soon as they got on the train, it was go time for like yes. an hour and 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. The stress actually started to like take its toll on me kind of close to the end. Like I was getting very tired, but not necessarily in a bad way. So it's kind of like a neutral point, if you will.
So I didn't have a whole lot of points for that. It was more just you did feel the length of the movie. And I think in horror, sometimes it's not a good thing.
I don't know that I felt it. I think it's possible that it was because it was a rewatch for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't really notice it. Now, that being said, I did have to watch the ending 3 times because I fell asleep twice while I was at the beach. But that's not to say anything about the movie. I just, my friends already tease me because I fall asleep in horror movies all the time.
All right. And then my last con, it's going back to the businessman, and for how much of a piece of crap he was throughout the entire movie and just like what he represented and everything, I really wish he had gotten a more brutal end.
Well, I think it's actually kind of genius in the way that they didn't. Yeah, he was this big, to himself, he was like this important asshole.
Yeah.
So the way he died was just kind of like a regular person.
And I can definitely see the argument, but I guess for me, like, he was the reason why so many of our characters we grew attached to died. he let a lot of people die. He sacrificed people, like when he threw girlfriend into the zombies, and I really wanted to see him get put down a lot more brutally, and I do wish he had gotten a lot more than what he actually ended up getting. I see your point, Jay. It's actually not a bad point, but I wish we would have seen, like, kind of like how in like Shaun of the Dead, where we saw the one like Beta get pulled out and ripped to shreds. I wish we had seen something like that. You have a good point though.
That part in Shaun of the Dead is so satisfying.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, right? It was satisfying to watch him, and he was like so terrible about the whole movie, like get his, right? I wish we had, like, even if like we had just seen him like get torn apart when he fell off the train or get run over by the tracks or something. Like, I sometimes it's okay to watch people get brutally destroyed when they deserve it, and that guy absolutely earned whatever was going to come his way. So I was a little bit sad that he didn't get much, and he even ended up taking down the dad too, which burnt me a little bit, because I don't know.
I did like that they didn't have any kind of like redeeming arc for him. Like, he was just a douche the whole movie and then just died. Like, I've heard you guys talk about social commentary a lot, and you know, there was an obvious like dislike for corporate entities in this movie. And
well, that was I should have brought that up, but that was something that me and Devin talked about, is that it's funny to see that not trusting the government and hating big corporations isn't just an American thing. It is a global thing.
Actually, kind of something I completely forgot about this. I didn't even write it down. But in the plot, kind of going back to prose for a second, I actually loved the fact that they figured out, like, it was pretty much the dad's company's fault.
Oh,
and
nothing really happened. I was going to talk about this in cinematography, but wait. When he got the phone call, he didn't like cause it, but they were the ones investing in the company.
After
the phone call, he washes the blood off his hands in the sink.
It was almost like refreshing to see, like, yes, we know what the cause was, but unless I'm misremembering, I was sick when I watched this, but I don't think they bring it up after that. Like, what, like, the dad knows that his company was at fault, but he didn't tell anybody. He just kind of,
He was his investment firm was the ones who were keeping that company afloat, and then they realized, No, that's a really, really, really good point.
All right, guys. Another pro for me was they didn't spend a whole lot of time like talking about how it happened. Like, you just get that little intro, and then you're just right into it. Like, there's not a lot of exposition. It just happens, and you have to figure it out.
Yeah, that was something that Romero would do too, right? He wouldn't spend his time on that. Like, sometimes in a zombie movie, it's not a problem. Like in the Resident Evil movies, right? It's Umbrella is a character, and if you're gonna sink the time into the cause and like make that like a focal point, that's fine. But a lot of movies like will try to explain it when it doesn't need to be there. I think the explanation given for this one was perfect. Like, they didn't go into it too much, and they didn't go into it too little, but it was just a perfect amount. Okay, so time to give scores. I gave it an 8.5. Justin?
I gave it a 10.
I also gave it a 10.
Wow. Wow, really?
Power Dad Fantasy, I mean, like, Matt had it right. Like,
wow, okay.
And I mean, that is my highest score, but yeah, I gave it a 10.
All right, moving on to cinematography. The first pro that I have is that we mentioned this when I went through the production notes, but it was shocking to me, and it really took me off guard when I found out that this was Sang-ho's first live-action film he directed, because it was beautifully crafted. It really, really, really was.
No, I agree, and like you see it in like specifically. Actually, you posted a GIF of it earlier, like the hallway kind of hallway fight scene, I guess is what you would call it.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Yeah, like that is amazingly shot.
And then going further on that, like I really enjoyed how the zombies like acted on screen, in particular the tunnel sequences, right? That was a unique thing. I never actually seen that before in a zombie film.
It was refreshing.
And
which is like really hard to say in the zombie genre.
Exactly.
And it was well shot, and the zombie actors did a good job pulling it off, and just like the way they reacted to the sounds and the way that the lights in the tunnel were passing by. It was just really, really well done. And it's, like I said, it's just crazy to think that this is a freshman effort in live action. And I thought that was really, really cool.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing how many different camera angles they managed to pull out of a train, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're going in expecting like, what's that Colin Farrell movie, Phone Booth? You're expecting Phone Booth level of like not really anything interesting happening, but no, I mean, they make it interesting and you're on this train literally right up until the end.
Yeah. The next pro that I have is that I'm assuming this was a cultural reason, but I really liked how there was almost a lack of gore. Like normally in zombie films, like they go over the top sometimes.
Yeah.
And it was kind of similar to me to 28 Days Later, right, where the gore is there, the gore is present, but it's more left to your imagination. Like you still see some of the effects, but it's not thrown in your face.
Yeah, I think that if anything, like you see more of like, I don't know how to word this, but like the gore on the zombies themselves, like,
or
you
on
don't
your,
really s-
yeah or on the characters after they like interact with them.
Yeah, you don't really see, like, you don't see, like, anybody, like, pulling guts out or, like, anything like that that is commonplace.
And the brutality is still there, right? Like, the brutal nature of the zombies and just, you know, yeah, of the humans interacting with them, too. But almost that, like, that lack of it almost made it a little bit more tense to me. And I did like that.
Actually, kind of, on that point, the one thing that really stuck with me in the cinematography is that, like, personally to me, this is just like a better Korean World War Z.
Oh my gosh, I have the same note. I have like what World War Z could have been. I was about to say that. Like there wasn't even any like noticeable CGI. You know, like in World War Z it's so obvious in certain parts that it's computer generated. And like I just didn't pick up on that as much in this
movie. Neither did I.
Yeah.
One time I did, and it was when the zombies were coming up out of the train. Almost in the last like half hour when they're in the train graveyard.
Okay.
Yeah,
that was
the
only time I did notice it, but I do agree there's a lot of practical effects going on. And I mean, if you watch the prequel, The Thing, you can see why CGI is just not the way to go when it comes to certain movies. And then the last pro that I have, for me, I think slow-mo shots are overdone and can be kind of dumb, but there is one I'm going to talk about in cons, but overall, I thought the slow-mo camera work was fantastic, and I am particularly thinking about when the old lady frees her zombified sister to kill the bad people, the evil people, I guess, in the safe car. And I thought, like, I even told them, like, they're going to go slow-mo. And they did, and it was well done. And like I said, sometimes I think it can be kind of stupid, but I thought it was brilliant.
I actually had a note too about the camera work. And maybe I'm wrong here, but I found it very interesting for a movie that there was so much running that I didn't notice any shaky cam.
Yeah.
Like
that's a good point.
You know, like pretty much now if there's running, there's going to be a shaky cam. There wasn't. There were like just like long shots and people running and it was smooth. Like I didn't ever feel like, you know, I don't know. It wasn't ever forced, you know?
Yeah. And like,
Go, Jay.
Okay. I was just going to say, and you could like, I think they did a really good job of making you feel the length of the train, which is kind of weird to say, but they did a really good job at making you feel like, holy crap, this train goes on forever. But you kind of know where you are and you can kind of get that. Yes. Between here and like three cars away, there's like hundreds of zombies.
And then, so my first con goes back to the slow motion, and it has to do, I actually really didn't like the sequence when they got off the train after they realized the zombie apocalypse had happened into the quarantine.
Oh, really?
Well, plot wise, I didn't like that they did it plot wise. That's probably the part where I would take some, like, where if I were to cut down the time a little bit, it would be somewhere around there. But I didn't like how it went to slow-mo when the dad realized the quarantine was broken and he turned around the run. I don't know. I thought that was kind of like cheesy, almost in a sense.
I can kind of agree with you. I mean, I think if the, I mean if they had to do it in that part of the movie, I think it would have made more sense kind of when either the zombies are chasing everybody up the stairs, or maybe the turn of the first zombie kind of when they get to the bottom of the stairs would have made more sense. No, I can definitely see where you're coming from that.
I thought it was a little bit exploitive of the audience. Like you knew it was coming. Like, you knew it had happened. And I don't know. I just didn't like that. That is when it comes to slow-mo, when I don't like when they do it. But besides that, that was, like, the big con. And then the last one, when the old lady lets the zombies into the safe car, I did not realize or recognize that the businessman and the train worker had made it into the bathroom for safety. And I don't know how they did, because the businessman was closest to the old lady when she opened the doors. Like, he's the one who recognized what she was doing. And I get why they did it plot wise, but the way they set up the scene, he should have been like the second to go, because he was the closest besides the old lady opening the door.
I
had that same kind of groan moment the first time I watched it, when, you know, it finally gets back to him and he's in the bathroom and you're like, oh, this dick is still alive. What? How?
Yeah, and that, exactly. And it's like, I get what they did it, and it made for good plot development. But the problem for me came in that the scene wasn't set up to support that, like with the way the characters were stationed when the zombies broke in. And we didn't see it, and they even went slow-mo in the when the zombies were pouring through there, and you never saw him, the businessman or the conductor guy, make it to the bathroom. So it is nitpicky, but at the same point in time, like, when you're gonna go slow-mo and you're gonna draw attention to where characters are at in the train, and it's so important with the train's like setup, right? It was a little bit sloppy. I didn't take off a whole lot for it, but it did bug me.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Anything else, guys?
I will say, personally, I did notice the CG.
Oh, did you?
Okay. Yeah, kind of just whenever the zombies were like piling up, you could notice it behind them. It seemed like there was like a wave of people. Other than that, though, I mean, I didn't really have a lot of problem. Like, again, for his first live action movie, this is amazing.
And on the small budget that they shot on, too. Like,
yeah. Like, I wish
much bigger budget.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, like, and I mean, to Americans anyways, like, high, really, really well-known actors, right? Mm-hmm. So, but no, I honestly, I think this movie is really well shot. Like,
yeah, no, I agree. Matt, any last thoughts before we give scores?
No, I mean, I feel dumb because at first for cons, I had no standout moments written. And then as we talked about it, everything I mentioned was a standout moment. And I was like, well, there go my cons. I might need to adjust my score here.
All right, so I gave it an 8.
I gave it an 8 as well.
Gave it a 9.
All right, perfect. Moving on to audio. So, spoiler, I don't speak Korean. But
what?
All of the acting, to me, seemed top tier. Like, I bought into every single character being where they were in this movie. Maybe if I understood the language, I could hear the actual acting. Maybe I wouldn't feel that way. But I thought it was fantastic. In particular, I thought that the father and Rocky were the best.
Rocky is, again, favorite character. My saddest part of the movie was when he died. But no, I agree. I mean, they convey their characters really well, even without... It's kind of like a mix of body language and...
Yeah.
Like, audio. Because, again, like us... We don't speak Korean, so we don't know what they're saying. So we kind of have to half read their body language. And I think they did a really good job.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a pro for me with foreign films in general, is like, because I don't speak the language, I can't tell on the inflection or anything like that.
Yeah.
So really, you focus more on the story. So if the story falls flat, you know, the movie falls flat. But so as long as the plot is good, it's a good movie, because you're not paying so much attention to the acting. You know, you're reading the subtitles and paying attention to the story.
And I've never seen a crappy foreign film, right? I mean, as I'm sure foreign people have not watched Zombievers, right? like the foreign films I'm aware of when it comes to like it's like High Tension or Let the Right One In, like they're top tier foreign films. And that's something, maybe you're, that's a really good point, Matt, is that since you can't speak the language, you're more looking for character reaction to what's going on and like facial expressions and just situational stuff. And so even though normally here we would talk about actor performances, we still kind of are, but it's not so much what they're speaking.
It's not in the same way they're acting. Yeah.
Now, that being said, I feel like Su-on was so good. You talked about crying at the end of the movie.
The little
that
girl?
Kid's reaction. Yes, the little girl was amazing. Like for a child actor, I mean.
It was a little much, gut-wrenching. Don't you think?
No, no. God, no.
No, definitely not.
It was gut-wrenching. It was, ugh.
I don't have a daughter though. I know you both do. So maybe that's just me. But
kid, everything is a little much with kids. So she nailed it.
That's a really good point.
The next pro that I have is that the zombie noises, like the noises the zombies made when they're moving and like how their bodies twisted and stuff, and the noises that accompanied it was almost like unique to this film, and it was good.
Yeah, I was actually kind of thinking they must, like, the main ones that we see a lot, they must be, like street dancers or something, because I don't know people who can move like that.
Yeah. Well, maybe lay their bodies and stuff. No, I totally agree, yeah. And I thought that the noises accompanying it, you didn't get the zombie groan, you didn't get the rage virus, like, screaming. It was a different kind of zombie presence, and it was a different kind of zombie anyway, and I did appreciate that.
I like that they were almost like a hybrid between the rage and the walkers. Like, I noticed that too. It's like almost because they were so twitchy, they couldn't really go full speed, but they were still fast, you know? So
they were running humans. They weren't like superhumans.
Yeah, but they were like, you know, falling over each other and just kind of jerking. And, you know, it was really unique as far as like zombie movies go. I really liked that.
The next thing I have, we talk about this a lot, the tunnel sequences. I'm not sure if you guys noticed it, but it got quiet.
Oh, yeah. It kind of put you in the mood.
Like, not only the characters got quiet, but, like, just the ambient noises, and you could hear the lights almost passing down. Like, it's like you wouldn't, if you were in a tunnel, right? You could hear the lights kind of passing.
Yeah.
And
when you've got those sounds of the tracks in the background that you hear anytime you're on a train, you know, it's like, you know that's what that
sound
is.
It just really set the scene well. And like whenever they stepped, like when they stepped in the can that one time where he tossed the phone, it was just amplified so well. And I just really thought that, speaking in regards to audio here, that the tunnel sequences were really, really good. All right. And then the last pro that I have is the score and the accompaniment was good. Like, I enjoyed it, but it's not memorable.
That was actually going to be one of my cons, is that, again, we kind of come across another movie that doesn't really have, like, a standout theme, if you will.
And maybe, I don't know if that's, like a spoiled thing on our part, where, like, we get these iconic scores for, like, Freddy, Jason, Michael, like, even Ghostface, right? Like, they have these themes that you hear and you know it, and so maybe, I don't know.
I was just going to say, that's not a huge con for me. Like,
it wasn't for me either.
I will say that the audio didn't really stand out. Like, I think it was subtle, and it was good that it was subtle. You know, for me, the major pros in audio were the acting and the, you know, just the way the scenes were shot. I guess that's not really audio, but you know what I mean. But like, as far as the theme, like, I don't think a theme would have really fit this movie. You know, like, I think the music was good for the movie itself. You know, like, the most recent theme that I can even think of is like Avengers. Like, you know, it has a very obvious theme now. They play it like 80 million times in every movie. So like, sometimes it can almost be gimmicky. So, you know, it's not a huge con for me if they don't have a theme.
Yeah.
That's actually a really good point.
I mean, I do see your point, but for me, I guess, like, I would like to be able, like, Justin last week was able to hum the Shaun of the Dead theme, right? Like, I would like...
Well, not very well, but yeah.
But you did, right? And
yeah.
Just to stick around a little bit longer, right? Because, like, the next day after I watched it and I was taking my notes on my thoughts, right? I was trying to think of it and I couldn't. And that's kind of my point. Is like, I don't need it to be something that I'll never forget, like Michael Myers, but I would like to remember it 24, 48 hours later. And that's not here. And again, I don't take off a lot of points for this. Like, I've talked about this a lot, but it is something that helps me separate the really, really great accompaniment from the so-so accompaniment.
Yeah.
And then my last con, I had two, but you guys disagree with me on the little girl at the very end. I thought it was like, all right, calm down. But I don't understand why she was learning a Hawaiian folk song in school, and like why that song was chosen. And I don't understand its correlation to like if there's a deeper meaning. Like I didn't know Aloha A was like a big. Like, I don't know its deeper meaning, and I don't know if Koreans would know it. Like, that seems like a really, really weird choice. And it was kind of a, like, I get the symbolism for why she sang it through the tunnel, but it was a really, really weird song to end it on.
I wonder if that's just, like, a cultural thing.
It might be.
That song in school commonly.
Yeah, and I didn't have a whole lot of points for it, because, like I said, some of this stuff might be cultural, but it was just weird. And it was weird.
Yeah.
All right. So that's it for audio. I gave it an 8.5.
I also gave it an 8.5.
I gave it an 8.
All right. Now moving on to How Scary. And I think this might be the part where I separate from you guys a whole lot.
I don't know.
Okay. So I was actually concerned about talking about this. And I didn't find like
I will say before we get into it, I didn't The Boy it and give it a 2. Don't worry.
Okay. I didn't find the film all that scary. And part of me wonders if this is actually more of a drama film than a horror film. Like, it's still a horror movie, but I think the strength of this movie, like we talked about, comes from the interpersonal drama, right? The interactions between the father and the daughter, between the father and Rocky, between the businessman and the father, between the two old lady sisters. Like, to me, the tension in, like, it was more dramatic. It was more emotionally tugging. Whereas, like, there were parts where I jumped. Like, don't get me wrong. There were definitely sequences where I was, like, nervous and tense and, like, on edge, right? But thinking back on it and reflecting, was taking my notes and, like, writing my score down for this, I do kind of feel like it was more dramatic and it was more emotional. Maybe that's a cultural thing. Like, maybe, like if I haven't seen a lot of Korean horror films, maybe it's something that is more there. Like, they focus more on the interpersonal relationships and the more dramatic nature of them in the horror films. But to me, that was my big takeaway, is that it is a horror movie, but I look at it more of a drama film.
I actually think, like, the horror in this movie comes from the constant stress, comes from the constant feeling that these people could die.
But not always, though. And that's kind of where I would counter you, is that they're only in stressful situations when they put themselves in it, right? There is the kind of the countdown to get to the safe car to go back to their daughter and stuff when they're getting trapped, right? But when they're in the between the cars or between the closed doors, they're safe. Like, they know how to counter the zombies, and they're only in danger when they go in and encounter it, but they're like prepared for it almost, you know? I thought it was most stressful at the first quarantine stop, even though I kind of thought it was a little bit redundant. The first quarantine stop was tense, and then the end when they started going down, like when Babe Ruth and his girlfriend were killed, and when the businessman killed the conductor, like, to me, I felt that was the most tense part. That's where I'd agree with you there. But when they're in the train, they're almost set up in a way where they can actually focus on the character drama in between the stressful situations of interacting with the zombies.
I mean, I think every horror film kind of has its highs and lows as far as the tension. I struggled with my score for... Well, no, not The Conjuring.
That's the Conjuring puts you in the seat and lets you go.
Yeah, but I kind of struggled with my score for this, just because in general, I've watched so many zombie movies now, I don't really find them scary. Like, I love watching them. Like, I'm not scared. I might be tense, But so I was trying to like kind of find the balance between horror and scary, because I didn't want to give this, well, for one, I didn't want to give it a worse score than The Boy, because it's definitely not less scary
no,
than
it's
The
not.
Boy.
No, it's not.
But so I like looked back at my score and I was like, I'm at least giving it a higher one than that. But but like for me, I think there's, because they're on a train, they're on a moving train and they're trapped, you get this sense of claustrophobia throughout the whole movie. Like, I'm 6'3", so when I'm on a train, I can barely move. Like, I can't imagine being stuck on a train trying to get away from zombies, because it's like, you don't really have anywhere to go. Like, they have some places, but even if they get, like, into the bathroom, the zombies are right outside. Like, how are they going to get away? They're essentially trapped as long as it's moving. And, I mean, I can't imagine trying to fight in between train seats, especially when they're, like, getting knocked down onto them. And, like, in a way, it's almost like a protective barrier, you know, because the other they can't get, like, hoarded, but like, you know, they're still like in that those small quarters trying to fight three people against all these zombies coming after them. I mean, it just
but it
gave like a lot of helplessness.
But it's not like all of these zombies though, right? Because the number of zombies can't grow. There's like an X amount of zombies on the train, so when you put one down, that's one less zombie. So
that's
could...
actually kind of one thing I noticed, is that like I don't really think we see a lot of zombies actually get put down.
We don't.
I know. I know. At one point, we see Rocky actually snap one of one's
neck.
Yeah,
that was
but
awesome.
But it just if you notice in the next scene, it's just still there. It keeps going.
That's why they have to move quick, because a lot of times they get right back up and go after him. I mean, especially the one at the end that gets Rocky. You know, like you think it's dead, and then it turns its head and scurries up the door and bites
him in
the hand.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like. You think it's down and it's not. So I just, like I said, those close quarters fighting for your life like that, like it just gave me that like stressful feeling through a lot of the movie, even though they did put themselves in that situation at several times, you know?
Yeah. But like I said, when I give my score, the reason why it is what it is that there were scary parts and there were tense sequences, but I felt the film gave the audience way too many opportunities to catch their breath and to kind of forget about the zombie outbreak and focus on the character interactions.
Okay.
And that's why I think it kind of feels more dramatic than it does horror. But, I mean, that's my personal opinion.
Well, I mean, I will say for this movie, it felt more to me like a action movie than a horror movie. Like, to me, my comparison is like Jurassic World to Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
You know? That shift, like Jurassic World is a much more fast-paced movie. It's more action-y than Jurassic Park is.
Yeah.
And so that was like kind of the comparison that I made.
No, I totally agree.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
All right, guys, time to give our last scores. I gave it a 6.
I also gave it a 6.
Gave it a 7.
Like I said, I didn't go crazy on it, but it because it was tense. But like I said, it let me catch my breath way too often for me to be able to just really just go too praiseworthy on it.
Oh man, can we talk about though, I do have to say that scene where they're coming down the escalators and they're basically stuck trying to get back up.
Yeah,
that
was
like
great.
The people on the stairs were so smart. I was like, thank you for taking the stairs, but the rest of the people on the escalator, I was like, well, they're screwed.
All right, guys, let's wrap up these scores. So for plot, I gave it 8.5. Justin gave it a 10, and Matt, you gave it a 10. For cinematography, I gave it an 8, Justin gave it an 8, and Matt gave it a 9. For audio, Justin and I gave it 8.5, Matt gave it an 8. And for how scary, me and Justin gave it a 6, and Matt gave it a 7. That gives it a composite score of an 81% B-. Slotting that into the master list of scores, that sets it right in between Halloween 1978, which also has an 81% B-, and the original Silent Hill game with an 80%.
Okay, I can see it fitting there very well.
So then just to run through our zombie season scores from the best piece of media to the least best, the worst, I guess. Resident Evil 2 Remake, the video game, has a 95% A. That is our top rated media overall, and it's the top for the zombies. That's followed by 28 Days Later with a 94%. Followed by Shaun of the Dead with a 93. Followed by Train to Busan is an 81% B-, followed by Resident Evil 2, the original, with a 70%. That is followed by The Last of Us. I forgot that that was this season. that's a 66%. Followed by Night of the Living Dead with a 62%. Then the original Pet Sematary with a 54%. The new Pet Sematary with a 51%. The White Zombie Bela Lugosi Classic with a 46%. And that is our lowest rated zombie media. So any last thoughts, guys, on Train to Busan before we head on into the closing?
We didn't talk about the prequel at all.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we didn't watch it, so go ahead and tell us about it.
Yeah. So I was actually a little disappointed because they really didn't get into too much into the, how the outbreak started. But I do think that they were actually fairly creative with it because, you know, a lot of times that's like one of the most difficult parts of a zombie movie is like, how would this happen? You know, like people are just going to stand there and let themselves be bit. Like, what's going on? And the way it spreads is that it actually starts with the homeless population. Mm. And there's like a clear class divide and people basically ignore them. They just think they're a pain. Yeah. And so it spreads among all the homeless people. And then by the time people realize what's going on, they've just got these hordes of homeless zombies that are running everywhere, biting people. So I thought that was a really kind of neat origin story. They didn't focus a whole lot on it, but that was one cool thing that I took from that movie. Yeah, that I thought was great.
Because I noticed you actually mentioned something about a twist.
Oh, yeah. So I this is a huge spoiler, so if you haven't seen it, maybe go watch it. But basically, there's like two main characters. It's a girl and her like semi-abusive boyfriend. Like, you kind of find out that she was previously like a prostitute living on the street. Okay. And through the whole movie, she gets separated from her boyfriend, and the boyfriend like meets her dad and is trying to find her. Well, when they finally meet back up, it turns out that the dad was actually her pimp that she escaped from, and he stabs the boyfriend and kills him and starts chasing her. And so it was just like out of nowhere, like it totally caught me off guard.
Damn, that actually sounds really cool.
Yeah.
It's on Shudder, right?
Yeah, it's on Shudder.
All right, cool. So with that, guys, that is our final zombie review. We're going to go ahead and wrap this up. We have a quick commercial from one of our sister networks. This week, it is the That's Not How Science Works, right, Justin?
Yes, it is.
And with that, we're going to go into the closing, which will have a retrospective of our zombie season. And then we're going to talk about what the next season will be.
Do you ever watch a horror movie and think, oh, wow, that headshot didn't have nearly enough blood? Don't the writers know that 20% of your blood is in your head?
Are you the type of person that tells your friends, well, why yes, in space no one can hear you scream because the molecules are too far apart to transmit sound waves?
Does it seriously annoy you when a horror movie doesn't explain its rules to you or claims to have horror rules and then just ignores them?
Do you ever express these concerns to your friends who tell you that you should stop worrying so much because it's just a horror movie, Sam?
Then stop lecturing your friends about physics and come listen to our podcast, That's Not How Science Works, which I co-host with my awesome friend, Nicole.
In our podcast, Caitlin and I discuss science in different pieces of media, such as movies or TV shows, in various genres, and dissect whether that science is good, bad, or just plain ridiculous. Often, we also have special guests who help us rant about bad science in their areas of expertise.
We release new episodes every other Monday, and you can find us wherever you usually download your podcasts. We like to think of this as a podcast for the science curious. Whether you're Sam with a dedicated YouTube channel complaining about bad science and horror movies, or just like to learn things while listening to friends banter about what they watched that week, we'd love for you to listen in.
You can find out more by going to our website, thatsnotscience.com, or by looking us up on Twitter at TNHSWpod. We hope you give us a listen. Now back to your regularly scheduled horror enthusiasts, Larry and Justin, and that's definitely a word that's a real word and not a word that I just made up, and whatever terrifying thing they're discussing that would probably give me daymares for a week.
All right, so we finally made it. We went off track a little bit, and I thought I would just list off the episodes that we did, and then when we do that, we'll kind of just give what our personal favorites and least favorites were. And then we're going to have, I've decided to be a little bit nicer to you. I'm going to tell you what we're reviewing. and then you have to guess what the theme of the next season is. I will tell you, it's a mini season.
Okay.
We're trying something different.
All right.
But on topic for zombies, we reviewed the 1932 White Zombie. We had a fictional history of Resident Evil. We reviewed the original Resident Evil 2 and the Resident Evil 2 remake. We reviewed Romero's Night of the Living Dead. We reviewed The Last of Us, which, to be clear, is not a horror game. We reviewed the original Pet Sematary and the remake, which was trash. We reviewed 28 Days Later, which is our top film. We had a discussion between Romero's Zombies versus Rage Zombies, and Justin came out swinging, even though he was working like 90 hours. Really put me on my heels. Put a grad student who's about to become a doctor in his email off his toes and made him look foolish. So it was pretty impressive.
I will say that month is pretty much just a black hole for me. I don't even know what happened.
We reviewed Shaun of the Dead, and then just this week reviewed Train to Busan. Off topic, for my birthday we reviewed The Faculty, which is my top tied favorite horror film of all time. We had our interview with Bob DeRosa. He was the writer for Video Palace and all that other fun stuff. We had on Devin Siddell, who was the voice of Tamra in Video Palace, along with one of Justin's favorite scenes in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. We had on Rachel from the Zombie Girls podcast to re-review Suspiria 2018 once Justin saw it and once I was able to calm down from my anger with it not being, you know, Argento's. We had on Allison Lang, our horror writer, and we talked a lot about feminism and horror, and that was a lot of fun.
Fellow Canadian.
Yeah, another Canadian for Justin. We reviewed The Leprechaun for St. Patrick's Day, and oof. We had our surprise Twicast episode for April Fool's Day.
I forgot that existed.
I can't believe I listened and to then the whole thing.
And then we were nice and released our previously private Haunting of Hill House review, just so that there was still some content that week. We reviewed Jordan Peele's sophomore effort, Us, with patron Kyle. We had on Ashley Blackwell, who was the co-writer and producer for Horror Noir, and that was amazing. We did Alien 1979 for its 40th anniversary. It was my first go with that movie. We reviewed for Justin's birthday Silent Hill, another first play for me. We had on Alice Collins, a writer for Bloody Disgusting, to talk about trans representation in horror. I thought that was a really fun discussion. And we reviewed Brightburn, which is the new horror film that I guess a lot of people didn't like, which makes me sad, but I loved it.
I will say, I just realized we've been on zombies for 22 weeks.
Yeah, we've been on zombies since I moved to Utah.
Like, oh boy.
Yeah.
It's a lot of
over half a year, to be honest. So with that, you won't hurt our feelings. Matt, what was your favorite and what was your least favorite episode from this very long season?
So I'm going to separate between on and off topic, I think.
Okay.
So like on topic, my favorite one was the Walkers versus Rage Zombies. Like I really enjoyed that episode.
It was good.
Cool to hear that it was like a tie, you know, almost.
Yeah,
like,
it wasn't planned. I thought I was gonna be waxing Justin.
Yeah.
And I was surprised I sided with him so much.
Yeah, so I really, really enjoyed that episode. For the off topic, I think actually this was my favorite episode of the season though, was the Ashley Blackwell interview. I really enjoyed that episode. I liked hearing like the industry stuff, you know, because I liked when Bob was on too. Just the different like industry people, like hearing all their stories was great. But Ashley's, I think, was the most interesting, and kind of hearing about her articles and just her perspective was great.
All right, awesome. And then how about your least favorite for on and off?
I have such a hard time because I really enjoyed this season, because you know how much I like zombies. So I would just say for me, least favorite was, I'll single this one out, was Brightburn, but it's only because I'm really lazy with going to see the new movies, and so I can't bring myself to listen to them until I've actually seen it. So there's a bunch of episodes that I just haven't listened to because I haven't seen the movies yet.
As long as you download them, that's all that matters.
Yeah. That's automatic. So.
All right, cool. Justin, how about you? I like his style. Pick your favorite and least favorite for on and off.
Okay. Favorite on is definitely Resident Evil 2 Remake, just because I've been waiting for that game. So when I finally got to play it, it was nice. Yeah. I actually agree. I loved the Ashley Blackwell review. I stepped out of my comfort zone for that one. I think it shows. Yeah, I don't know. It was interesting, I think. Yeah. My least favorite is, I'm pretty sure Larry can guess this one, it's definitely Pet Sematary 19. Like, without a doubt, I think we just...
We waited too long after we saw it to review it. It's actually not my least favorite. My least favorite can be something different. But I see why... I don't know how you felt about it when you listened to it, Matt, but like, going back and re-listening to it, I felt like we were kind of like dull. Like, we just didn't care. Like, it was just not a good movie, but it also wasn't bad enough that like we could laugh at it and tear it apart like Ginger Dead Man or Blair Witch Book of Shadows. Like, it was just kind of ugh.
I feel like, I mean, kind of behind the scenes, like, I think we waited like a month to record that after we saw it. It was just such a forgettable movie that I think it affected the review.
I guess I didn't miss anything not listening to that episode.
Nope.
That was another case, though. No, I hadn't seen the movie.
I wish I could say you did, but I mean, the movie's just not that good. And like, I was talking to Justin because I saw the numbers score that IGN gave to the new Child's Play. They gave it a 6.2. I was like, okay, well, what did they give to Pet Sematary? They gave it an 8. So I don't know who the hell reviewing movies over at IGN, but if anybody gives Pet Sematary 2019 an 8, they're dumb. They're a dumb person.
Oh, yeah, it's a bad movie. I'm actually going to kind of do something different. I actually really love all of our off-topic episodes, but there is a second on-topic episode that is tied for my least favorite.
Okay.
That's actually the Resident Evil history.
Why? I think you did a good job.
Oh, I did not like doing that. I think that was just more of like a behind the scenes. I didn't really like it.
That was the first time I kind of really put you in the forefront and made you kind of run the episode.
Oh, yeah. I hate being at like the center of attention.
Well, I really liked that episode. I actually kind of forgot you guys did that one, but I really did enjoy that. I like, because I haven't played all the games, so I liked hearing how all the pieces fit together.
And we were going to do like the real history of it, but we decided that's what Justin wanted to do.
Pages and pages.
And I was like, no, like, let's do the fictional history. Let's talk about the timeline and it's how goofy it is.
Oh, it's so goofy. I know. Anyways, but yeah, what about yourself?
All right, so on topic, my favorite. Like, part of me wants to say 28 Days Later, just because of how much, like, that's like a top five film for me. Like, put aside horror or anything, it's just a top five film. But I actually liked our White Zombie review. It's a little bit harder to take on such an old film, and I really thought we really busted out our critical chops in that one. And I was really proud of what we both did for that one.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I mean, I think the only reason, I mean, I won't lie, I kind of forgot we watched it. I think mostly because it just wasn't that good nowadays.
It wasn't, and it had its issues too, like culturally.
Yeah.
And then for my favorite off topic, I'm with you, Justin. I love them all, but gun to my head, I'm going to pick two. And I'm not going to pick Ashley since you guys already picked her. I'm going to say either Allison Lang or the Suspiria remake review.
Yeah, I do have to agree with that fellow Canadian of mine. So,
because I thought Allison really brought up a lot of points and there's a lot of good back and forth. And then with Rachel, like she's a self-avowed feminist, right? Like, going into those really, really like heavy topics and being able to discuss it with someone who has like had lived experiences, it actually kind of changed my view on Suspiria, and it shows in the score reflection too. So I was really, really, I really liked that.
And she pushed you on why you didn't like certain words.
That was really uncomfortable, and it's not very often I loved it. Made it uncomfortable, and she did a good job. My least favorite on topic is Shaun of the Dead, just because of just the hell of recording it. And I wish it was, been that bad, because I liked the movie, but like the power outages and the audio corruption and then just all the stuff that went on with it, just way too much stress, and I can't pick a least favorite for off topic. I mean,
Twycast.
I'll do Twycast just to throw a vote there. Okay, so now we're going to reveal next season. So I told you it's a mini season, and I also gave you the hint that it's not going to be one of our predefined genres. So these are the movies that we're reviewing. Okay. Next week, we're reviewing the original Child's Play. Week after that, we're reviewing the Child's Play remake. Week after that, we're reviewing Midsommar with Rachel. She's coming back on. Then we are reviewing Silent Hill 2 with Whitney. She has the Silent Hill Historical Society. She runs the Deadly Premonition fan site. And
she also has the
Whispers in the Dark
Guinness Book. Well, and the Guinness Book World of Records has her as the largest Silent Hill collector.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. She knows her Silent Hill stuff.
Oh, yeah, big time.
And then our last episode for this mini season is Event Horizon, the 1997 sci-fi film with...
Which I've never seen, by the way. You haven't seen...
Oh, my God, it's so great.
Nope.
With the That's Not How Science Work girls. So our new network, they're coming on to review that with us.
Isn't Event Horizon the one with the... where they do the paper and the pencil to do the wormhole? Isn't that from that movie?
Yes. Yeah, with Sam Neill from Jurassic Park and Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. That's...
And we're going to be talking about the flawed science in that movie with them, so it'll be a lot of fun. So with that being said, do you have any kind of guess what the mini season's going to be?
Oh, man, that's hard. Like, I want to – they all kind of have religious aspect to them, you know.
So I will say that I think you could – Silent Hill 2 doesn't belong in there. We just kind of wanted a reason to play it.
And Whitney was available to play it with us.
Oh, yeah. And I'm away that week.
Man, that's hard. Because it's like I'm trying to think of stuff, but I think the topics that are already there keep popping in my head. Maybe like to see then the Child's Play remake is throwing me off because of what I've found out about that movie, you know? But I guess that's against Possession.
Nope, it is... our summer blockbusters.
Okay. All right.
Because we wanted to do Child's Play. We wanted to do Midsommar because they're brand new releases. And we just decided to do this mini season. This will also be followed by another mini season after this. But that one's still be under wraps because we're still working out some kinks with some interviews and stuff. But it will be a film series specific season.
And this might be a big hint, but it's recently gotten longer.
Yes, we had to add something else to it. But yeah, that's it. So that's the end of the episode. Guys, any last thoughts?
I'm kind of... I know Larry and I have been talking about this behind the scenes a little bit, but I am... I know we kind of split off a lot from zombies, but it's actually kind of nice, I think, to be moving on to something else. And that's not to say I don't love zombies. I love zombies, but it's nice to... kind of take a breath of fresh air and kind of let zombies sit for a little bit. Because, I mean, literally, I think we could have had this season go on for years.
There's so much stuff to cover. We only did one of the Unholy Trilogy.
I mean, we only did one of Romero's movies.
That's what I was talking about.
Like, oh, yeah, sorry. I thought you said Cornetto's Trilogy.
No, the
like,
Unholy Trilogy.
The rest of them are in horror.
But I guess the last thought for me is Matt and Kyle, but you're here, Matt. You said it before, but thank you for giving us your hard-earned money. I know it's not a lot, but it means a lot to us, and it helps us we get feedback, and we love having you on, and we just appreciate it.
I mean, how can
yeah,
you...
and like,
sorry.
No, I was just going to say, and like, I mean, kind of to put it into perspective for both you and Kyle is we are able to kind of get our mini-season art because of you guys this time, so... Thank you. It really does help.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to seeing that. I mean, how can you resist paying that $6.66? I don't know how you just don't click the button, you know?
All right. With that, guys, thanks for hanging out with us for our very long zombie season. Tune in next week for the start of the Midsommar Blockbuster, where we review the original Child's Play. And until next week, stay scary. The Here's Johnny podcast is brought to you by Larry and Justin. You can find the show on Twitter at Here's Johnny Cast, and you can find Larry at Beaver LA.
You can find Justin at Pickle Thing, and you can email the show at Here's Johnny Podcast at gmail.com. You can look us up on Facebook at Here's Johnny Podcast.
As always, in the show notes, you can find links to the Discord. and to the website. We are also on Instagram at Here's Johnny_podcast.
Also in the show notes, we'll have a link to the Twitch and YouTube channels. And if you would like to support the show, you can head on over to patreon.com/Here's Johnny podcast. Every cent goes into the show. And yeah, we just really use it to make the show better. Again, I just want to say thank you very much to our patrons. You guys help make this possible.
But yeah, Patreon is the way we support the show. We aren't looking to get rich. And like Justin said, every dollar, every cent, it all goes back in. There's some pretty cool tiers, so head on and look at that.
But until next week, see you guys later.